You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. And it is Monday here on Locked On Phoenix Suns, which means Brandon is here. You might know him by Zona. We're going to get into a ton of stuff. The latest on COVID, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, which is setting Suns Twitter ablaze. But first, we are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and you can follow our show at Twitter, on Twitter and on Instagram, at Locked On PHX Suns. You can follow me, Brendan Kleen, your host, at BrendanKleen14. You can follow Brandon at AZ Sports Zone. And let's get right into it, Brandon, because we had some late-breaking news shortly before we were set to record this, that the Suns are in Memphis. They did practice. We did speak with Monty Williams. I may throw a clip in at the top of the show of what he said about this week's events. It seemed like the Grizzlies game was a full go with the team already in Memphis and obviously the MLK Day games being pretty important to the NBA. But then we see Jonas Valanciunas hitting the health and safety protocol for the Grizzlies and the 76ers game, which was their opponent on Saturday, that game on Sunday getting postponed as well. So just as we thought we were out of the woods here, it seems like we might be right back into it. What did you make of all of it?
Oh yeah. As soon as this morning when people are kind of not taking victory laps, but just, you know, it seemed like everyone thought the game was for sure happening, I was a little skeptical. And obviously that news dropping this afternoon was kind of a bombshell. So obviously we have no idea if the game's going to happen or not. I'd put it, you know, probably 50-50 at this point, just because like the protocols are so, just been so unpredictable. So we have no idea. That's the only thing that's certain is that no one knows.
It does seem like, you know, I wrote a whole kind of column blog post on Brightside this weekend, looking at like kind of how obvious it is in hindsight that the Suns game on Monday should not have happened. And, you know, whether it was the track record of the Wizards hitting matchups with teams and then one, either that team getting sick or a few days later, players on that team get sick, and just feels like that game was pretty clearly a mistake. I do think what we're seeing as we get further from it, almost a week out now, and those agreement between the players and the league is they're trying to avoid that type of domino effect from here on out. I don't know if they'll be successful, but when you think about it that way, it almost feels like that's why the 76ers game got canceled. And it just feels hard to imagine why this Grizzlies game should happen. Not to put a damper on things to start us off here, but that combined with, it looks like the Suns have Damian Jones, Dario Saric, and then Jalen Smith, who's still on the health and safety protocol. He was the one player on it prior to all of this, and he's still listed that way, which is a little tough to see. Honestly, I don't really know what to make of it, but I don't know. I mean, with Valanciunas, he's sort of just listed as out right now, but it kind of feels weird that they would just accept that and think, okay, yeah, no more Grizzlies are going to get sick here. I don't know. That doesn't seem like it follows anything we've seen in the league so far.
Yeah. And just going back to like you alluding to the domino effect of just, you know, that Wizards game, obviously the NBA, they're trying to overcorrect that mistake, I think, at this point. And it's just a game that it shouldn't have happened. If you just look, you know, if there's one or two teams that you play and like that happens, like, okay, it might just be random, you know, positive tests or tracing will happen. But for like five straight opponents, like, I mean, come on, you have to see the trend there. And they failed to prevent that. And now the domino effect is the Suns have had their last three games canceled. And that's why I think just cutting it out from the start, like obviously in the short term, it's a negative impact on their revenue and everything. But in the long run, it's just the best thing to do.
Yeah, to give some insight as well into what Monty Williams had to say about everything, you know, all things considered, he wouldn't clarify if Dario and who was the other? Damian Jones were positive, if they were just still in the contact tracing isolation, which seems vague to say the least as far as how that's being determined, but maybe it was a result of, I don't know, those guys are big men and they played against Hachimura and Wagner. I don't know. I can't guess why they would still be in the protocol as contact tracing targets, but then, you know, other players would be out. So maybe they did test positive. Monty would not confirm, but he did generally say that, you know, this situation this week for them wasn't as stressful as maybe he assumed, or maybe as we might think from the outside, just nobody getting overly sick, everybody sort of being able to follow the rules the right way. Players, he said, you know, weren't complaining or nagging at anybody about when are we going to get out or when can we do this and this isn't fair or whatever. And that they were able to do sort of the, if you think back all the way to last summer, May, June time, when the Suns were, when the whole NBA was doing those one-on-one workouts. I guess that's sort of what they were only were able to do in that October, November range before the season restarted this season as well. And that's what they were still able to do during this period. And I guess that's better than nothing. But I guess, you know, maybe there was a question in the press conference, Brandon, of somebody being like, does it help to kind of go through it once to realize like it's not sort of the sky is falling? I mean, it's like a silver lining of silver linings there, but maybe it is a good thing to have it where you're not panicked the next time something like this does come up.
Yeah, I think it's obviously no one has dealt with this before, so the league is learning on the fly as well as teams. So it's one of those situations where just like day by day, they're going to get better at managing it, I think. And it's just going to come down to, you know, just the day by day process of it. And I've seen a lot of people compare it to like the MLB or the NFL with like some of the cases they had. And it's so different because, you know, in the NFL, you have a whole week in between games, and in the MLB, there's not as much like direct contact as there is NBA. And so just the everyday thing and just like, you know, guarding opponents like that close just exposes you more to it. So it's very different as far as the day-to-day approach that they're going to have to manage. But I think they've done a good job of cutting it out now. And, you know, hopefully, I don't think the season will be canceled. I think this is just something that everyone kind of expected. There's going to be some delays and there might be a pause, but, you know, they'll get back on track. And I think they will sort it out. It's just going to, there's going to be some growing pains along the way. And I don't think that's a shock for anyone. I think the players knew what they're getting into. So it's unfortunate, happened to the Suns, and it was very avoidable, but, you know, just got to live and learn.
Yeah. And it's just a little sobering, I think, too, when I'm thinking back to how much grief, like the Marlins and, you know, teams, there are unique cases in which teams operated really poorly and did not follow the rules. But I'm just thinking generally of how much kind of crap we gave like the league for baseball and football not doing a bubble and having so much of a problem with things. And it's like, well, some of that looks like Little League stuff compared to what the NBA is already in the midst of. So I think the reality is kind of dawning on basketball fans and the league office. And like you said, even players and coaches who probably assumed a version of this was coming, but now are just being faced with it and having to adapt. And hopefully it is something we can put behind us as the country situation improves, because obviously these guys are not immune to that either. So that's one more reason to have some uninterrupted NBA months ahead to figure things out here. But yeah, not much more to say. We did hit on it several times this week, but we do have the update that hopefully Suns basketball will be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Arizona time on TNT. Pretty big matchup with John Morant healthy again. So something to look forward to start out the week here. I'm hoping most of you have the day off. But let's move on to the main topic of today's show, which is going to be this Mikal Bridges-DeAndre Ayton debate and sort of what it tells us about the NBA right now, what it tells us about the Suns' future, how we're kind of looking at it. We talked about Mikal, Brandon and I did, quite a bit last week. But we actually haven't talked about Ayton a ton, and it just seems like the conversation will not go away among Suns fans. So we'll dive into that in just one moment. But first, I want to tell you a little more about Built Bar, the most delicious protein bar out there, the best tasting and smoothest. They're delicious. They are covered in chocolate, soft and easy to chew. They are not bricks or chalky like medicine that some of these other ones can feel like, to be completely honest. If you've ever had like pre-workout or like tiger's milk, or they just, like, even saying the names of some of these products makes me feel pretty gross. Built Bar's not like that at all. I just got my latest shipment. I love every single flavor that I've tried. I truly have never tried one I don't like. They have chocolate and sweet flavors, but they also have fruity flavors like orange or carrot cake, stuff that you might not think is good, but really, it really is. If any of that is your thing, I promise you will not go wrong. If you're trying to lose or maintain weight, maybe you're just overall health conscious. You like to work out. You like to be on the move. You like to eat the right way. Built Bar can be a perfect little snack, a perfect pre or post workout, pump up, whatever you need, whatever diet you are on too. These are very, very low in calories, high in protein, and low in sugar. So perfect for just about any person or any diet. While supplies last right now, you are also getting that free cooler with every single purchase to keep those bars whole and not let them melt out in the sun. So go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, that is all one word, the name of our network, and you will get 20% off your next order. Again, use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Okay, let's dive into this Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton conversation. I don't even want to call it a debate necessarily, Brandon. And anyone listening, do not forget to check out Locked On Bets as well. I cannot forget to tell you about that show because it's the best one on the network right now, I have to say. Quick, easy, and puts money in your pocket. Lee Sterling, the best handicapper out there, your boy Q, keeps the show rolling every single morning for you. I'm sure they'll have plenty of NFL championship weekend bets, as well as NBA stuff every night, college stuff every night, NHL now that's started up. So check out that show. But back to what I was saying, Brandon, I just feel like it almost feels silly to call it a debate because we're not picking between these two guys, and the Suns don't have to pick between these two guys, but they are fascinating because they were drafted the same year, of course. And to me, I think the most interesting part is it's just sort of like epitomizes the debate in the NBA right now, or sort of the context in the NBA right now between wings and bigs and sort of what the value is for each of those positions.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's just natural for fan bases to, especially like you said, they're in the same draft class. So the comparisons will just naturally come, and they're both going to be due for extensions the same year. And, you know, like you said, just the bigs versus wings and just the overall value of bigs declining, I think also takes a toll on like the whole, like you said, debate in a way, even though it's really not. But I will say, just as far as, you know, if someone says Mikal Bridges is, you know, playing better than DeAndre Ayton, like, that's not a knock on Ayton. It's just a testament to how ridiculous Mikal has been to start the year. And some stats that I have lined up for Mikal: he's second on the team in points per game, second in rebounds, second in 3-point percent, leads the team in blocks. You know, 538 put out some player stats, and then wins above replacement, he's first on the team. Second in true shooting percentage, only behind Langston Galloway at 66.7. First in board, first in PER, first in win shares. So you can make a legit case that Mikal Bridges is not just better than Ayton, but like, he's been their best player as far as just like pure impact goes. And he's also leading the league in for lowest turnover percent at just 2.4. I got that from Spencer Davies of basketballnews.com. He had a really good feature on Mikal that I recommend. And
yeah, it was really well. He got a lot of, you can tell he got a lot of time with him, which is just cool.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think Mikal is definitely exceeding expectations, at least offensively so far. And just his two way impact has been incredible. And, you know, you see Ayton kind of struggling on the offensive end, but find his rhythm and confidence. So it makes it easy to sound like, you know, oh, Mikal is better than Ayton. Like, it sounds like it's a knock, but it's not. I think just kind of the small sample size of the season, and it's just natural discussion for any team.
It's interesting to me because I think the other reason that the debate has come up or is drawing people's attention again is you're seeing in real time Mikal Bridges add to his game and develop and genuinely like put together new things that he hadn't done in the past, whether that's off the bounce offense, get into the basket a little bit more. Even I've drawn attention to his rim protection. I think Kelly kind of filled that role in the weak side last year, but because he's not around and Crowder's not that type of player, we've seen Mikal protect the rim a little bit, and we, you know, he's a smart passer and keeps the ball moving in that way, and you know, can defend all sorts of different types of players. And it just isn't kind of as obvious maybe with Ayton, but I think it's also fair to say there just hasn't been as much improvement. He's gotten better at the things that he's good at. He's gotten, or that he sort of has to do as a center in this offense and in this defense, but you don't see him putting things together the same way. And so I think that just leads to natural disappointment on the part of fans, because you want to see more. We've been talking about his 3-point shooting. Okay, even if it's not that, it's like he showed flashes in the bubble and in the spring of putting the ball on the ground. Well, we really haven't seen that too much. It's like, pretty to me, with Ayton, I would say the number one thing that we've seen him add to his game this year is probably more consistently getting the green light and having effectiveness on those switches. It seems like we've seen him get into those situations a little more often this year, and he's made the most of that. But is there something I'm missing that Ayton has added that you would feel like was substantial progress, or do you even agree that he needs to be adding things? Where do you land on what we've seen from Ayton so far?
So defensively, I think he's definitely improved and just being more consistent with rotations and things like that. But there has been some offensive regression. And I will say, one thing about Ayton is like, he's always done a great job of bouncing back after like poor performances. So kind of sucks that we're stuck with this hiatus right now, because, you know, the NBA moves so quick, and like in just 3 games, you know, DeAndre could just have a crazy stretch, and, you know, Mikal could enter an offensive slump, and then the discussion just flips just like that. So I think anytime there's a long break like this, like discussions like this are just going to pop up, and whatever's the most recent is what people are going to be, it's kind of like ingrained in their head. So it's unfortunate we can't see DeAndre get in more of a rhythm, but at the same time, maybe he comes back from this break a little more in sync, and him and Chris Paul can kind of, you know, break down some of the things that they need to work on as far as their 2-man game and their chemistry. So yeah, I think offensively he definitely needs to improve. I think everyone knows that he needs to just attack more off the dribble, but honestly, defensively, I've been pretty encouraged, and I think long-term, big picture, like that's the most important thing, because you need a defensive center that is an anchor that can switch, and he's done a pretty decent job of that for the most part.
Yeah, and I think obviously with regard to defense, especially if you're not like a super prolific shot blocker, what happens that, you know, within a possession or over the course of a game or a season is like you're being a good defender means that things aren't happening, right? Like that's the point. You're taking things away from the opposing team. You're dissuading guys from attacking the rim. You're, you know, having a guy pass out of a post up. Like it's all about stuff that doesn't happen for good big man defenders. And so it's just not going to be as flashy. And I think that's part of it too. That's at least to me what seems like can happen on Twitter or on Bright Side of the Sun comments, is just when Ayton has like a quiet or like not stat sheet stuffing night, then it can just come off as like an uninspiring or bad game, even if that's not always the case. So I think that is the difference, just kind of again, between how perimeter players and big men affect the game in 2021. The last question I had for you in this segment before we get into like how much they might get paid or what, you know, trades or any of that type of stuff is just, do you feel like as things stand right now, that we're looking toward one or both of them getting extended this summer? Like, do you think that should be our expectation? Do you think it's like a wait and see? Do you think they might not get an extension? What are you kind of looking at with regard to that stuff?
Yeah, so it's very interesting just the time period we're in general with, you know, the COVID going on. It's definitely going to impact contracts and the CBA. So I think this, for the Suns specifically, it makes more sense to kind of wait and see a little bit, especially because there's still questions about both Mikal and DeAndre, just as far as, you know, how much, like, I think just by the end of the season alone, they're going to have a lot more, hopefully a lot more of a sample size to judge off as far as how much they're going to pay them. But ultimately, I think it could be for the best to just let them both go to restricted free agency and just see who's going to like overpay and just kind of let someone else set the value for your players. But, you know, Mikal is someone that I think teams are going to be infatuated with. So if they were to extend some, like one of the two early, I think it'd be him just because, you know, they want to get it done. And yeah, so it's, I think wait and see is probably more realistic just with everything going on at the moment.
It seems to like the wing value around the league is just going up. So you're taking advantage of, like, I think OG Anunoby signed a little bit of a depleted contract relative to what he could have gotten with the Raptors extending early. And I think you're going to just see more wing contracts that are huge. And that's going to be what you're kind of going up against when you're paying Mikal. So I think that could be another reason that we see maybe Mikal kind of get the upper hand in the negotiation, or not him get the upper hand, but him come first in the hierarchy here. Not because of anything between the two of him and Ayton as players or as building blocks or anything, but just because of that reality. But I think we both had some comps we might want to dig into as far as what that contract could look like and some more of those players aside from OG who might be like a little bit of a place to start building up a contract for Mikal. But before we get into that, I want to tell you about the second sponsor of today's show, which is Bet Online. We're actually recording this just as Saints Bucks is getting underway here, the Old Man Bowl, but a ton of fun games all weekend. The downfall of Lamar, the whatever happened with the Chiefs, and hopefully we see Pat Mahomes again, and the crazy ending to that game. But it's been one thing after the other. We have two more games next week, and there's only one place that has you covered for all of it, and only one place we trust here on the Locked On Podcast Network. That's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. I'm checking things out now, and because the AFC games are already wrapped up, the Chiefs are favored by 3 at home next week, which I'm actually surprised to see it that high with Mahomes' status so up in the air, although Andy Reid did say post-game that it looks like he is at least clearing the initial protocols and on the right track, but that, I don't know. I might watch the Bills line at least and see where it goes and potentially get in on that, because the Bills did look pretty good in their first two games. So we will see how that one goes, but keep an eye on that line at betonline.ag and take advantage of that promo code Locked On to get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. So maybe you're thinking you want to go low. Well, BetOnline will give you a little more to make that bet even better, even more worth your while. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Back here with Brandon to close out the show, talking the future, the next contracts, the trade value of Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton. Hopefully be back in your feeds tomorrow as well with a recap of the Grizzlies-Suns game, provided that goes off without a hitch. And we can start to get on a roll here. So check those feeds every single morning when you wake up. Hit that subscribe or that follow button on whatever platform you are listening on. But let's close out today here talking contracts, the future. Who are you looking at? Because you told me before we started recording you have some comps. And I don't want to get myself in trouble, because when I start talking about Ayton's value and guys that are similar to him in my mind, I tend to piss fans off. So I'll let you go first here for Mikal first. And then if you have any for Ayton as well, just so we can start to build up like a sort of a structure for what this might look like.
Yeah. So the first one was, you already covered, and that was OG Anunoby, 23 years old at the time of the signing. So, you know, 4 years, 72 mil, 18 million a year. I think that is the like baseline for Mikal. Especially if he keeps up what he's doing this year, and there's a lot of season left, obviously, so a lot can change. But as things stand, like, that should be his baseline, like the starting point. If he gets anything less, he should fire his agent. And yeah, so because they're pretty similar players too, as far as their role. I think Mikal has shown a little bit more offensive potential with like the pull up shooting and all that. But yeah, that's the one I liked. And then Jonathan Isaac at age 23. Got 4 years, 69.6 mil. So about 17.4 million a year. Again, just a defense first player with some raw upside, probably a little bit higher of a ceiling than McHale, but, so that was one. And then Gary Harris at age 23 got 4 years, 84 million. So he's making 21 million a year. And then the last one, a little bit older, was just Malcolm Brogdon at 26 years old. He got 4 years, 85 mil. So he's making about 21.2 per year. And
which actually looks like a pretty good deal for them right now.
Oh, yeah, it does. So that's, I think that's kind of his ballpark, somewhere in the 18 to like 22-ish range. A lot can change, though. Like I said, if he keeps up what he's doing right now, he maintains the efficiency and the shooting, then we could be looking closer towards 100 million guaranteed. But right as of right now, I think that's kind of around his range.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because you included the ages, which was interesting. Before we get to Ayton, like, how do you think that, because McHale will be about to turn 25 by the time he, or I don't even know exactly when free agency will take place, but he turns 25 at the very end of August. So how do you think that affects things, considering he will be a little closer to his prime when that deal, because that's this year, but the deal wouldn't even go into effect until he's almost 26, which is like the Brogdon situation. So how do you think that factors in?
So I do think it factors in general, but for McHale, it's not like, I don't think it's going to hinder his money making just because you're still locking him up in his prime years. So if anything, it's more of a bonus to get, you know, his age 25 to 29 locked up. So I don't think it'll affect him, but I do think it will affect is DeAndre, because he's 22 years old right now, 23 in July. So there's still, you know, whenever you're extending a younger player, you're not paying them for what they are. You're paying for what you expect them to be. So I think DeAndre is probably going to get a little bit more than you'd think on the surface, and he's going to have to earn it. So, and some of the comparisons that we'll jump into will kind of show you that, you know, his baseline is a lot higher than some fans might think or be comfortable with. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, the center thing has just been sort of all over the map. You know, like you look at Andre Drummond, who got max sort of because of his team circumstances, and other guys have kind of gotten into that sort of a situation as well. Like, you know, playing into their contracts, like you said, playing up to them over time, but maybe not being worth it right away. But the last one I wanted to run by you on the wing is Jaylen Brown, because I've kind of looked at him as obviously the upper tier of what might be possible for McHale, but it's not, I don't know. It doesn't seem crazy to me that it would be at least a number that comes up in negotiations. Like, if we're imagining what McHale's agent comes to the table with, he's going to say, okay, well, you know, Jaylen was coming off a down year. I think he averaged 13 points, 4 rebounds, and 1.5 assists in his the season right before he got his extension. That's nothing special. That's pretty similar to what McHale's put up so far. They're comparable players. Like, does it feel possible McHale could get to that point over the course of this season? And what would he have to do, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities, just because obviously the leap he's made has been very impressive. And if he can sustain this over the 72 game season, hopefully, then, you know, I think there's, like I said, he could be getting a lot closer to that 100 million range guaranteed, which, you know, even just a year ago, it sounded like insane just because of how, like, I don't want to say behind, but just how unsure he was on offense at times, and just he wasn't showing consistency there. So if he can show that over the course of the season, I think that really amplifies his value, and it's something that takes him from just being a role player to a potential star, which we kind of talked about last week. So I don't think it's too off base, but it's definitely a high end outcome.
Yeah, and what's sort of crazy is, like, it was a little bit of a risk. It was seen as one by the Celtics at that time, because again, that was probably Jaylen's worst season as a pro, and that's the one they chose to extend him after. And obviously they probably had some optimism that he could get a little better after the Kyrie thing went kind of into the past for them. But now, it again, kind of like Brogdon, is looking at least like a reasonable salary, but if not, like, actually favoring the Celtics at this point. Like, Brown might be underpaid if he keeps up what he's done so far. So it's always fascinating to kind of see those early extensions and what actually ends up happening over the life of them based on how they're interpreted in that first 10 minutes after the Woj bomb. But who do you have for Ayton as like the way you're contextualizing what he might be in for?
Yeah, so I just want to add one quick thing to like the end of what you just said too. Just as far as like players playing up to their contract. Another example, he doesn't really fit into this, but is Jamal Murray, just how everyone reacted when that extension went down. They weren't paying him for what he was at the time, but now that's looking like it's going to pay off.
De'Aaron Fox is another one. Like, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if he plays up to that, if he keeps getting better, what does he do to earn it? I mean, I like De'Aaron Fox, but they kind of max him and he hasn't accomplished the same as a lot of these other guys have.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these players are getting the benefit of the doubt just because they were drafted so high. So it's just an investment. And that's why I think for DeAndre, I have a few examples. Not all these are like necessarily comparisons, like, you know, skill wise or anything, but just in terms of what centers are getting paid somewhat recently. So the first one, this is like, again, just Miles Turner at age 22, 4 years, $80 million. So $20 million a year. I think he's going to blow that out of the water. And I'll tell you why. He's Steven Adams, age 23, 4 year, $100 million. So $25 million a year for Steven Adams.
Steven Adams has gotten overpaid on every contract he's ever signed.
Yeah.
I mean, so, I don't know. Maybe it's not overpaying. I don't know. I mean, he's a good player. He's a really good player, but just every time you hear how much Steven Adams makes, you just like take a deep breath.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, he's a solid starting center, but it's definitely a lot to pay someone that's not, you know, going to be one of your first, second, or third, or even fourth options offensively. So another one is Nikola Vucevic. Obviously, this one's, he's a lot older at the time of signing, at age 28. He got 4 years, $100 million, same as Steve Adams. So that $25 million is kind of a magic number. Because Gobert at age 24, he got the 4 year, $102 million. So he got about 25.5 per year. So I think right now with where everything stands, DeAndre Ayton's going to at least get $25 million a year. Like, that's, there's no question about that. Even if like he keeps up like the same pace he's on right now for this season, like that's what young centers are getting paid that are at the moment. So hopefully, you know, he can live up to that and just continue to develop, but it's definitely going to be a very steep like price just based off his potential, his age, where he was drafted, like all these things factor in. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Just based on some of those numbers, I had brought up in the past, just in terms of value and sort of like an archetype that I think Ayton might end up being similar to. I think he'll be better, but it's at least like a comp that I've given is Brook Lopez. And that salary, that contract is really good for Milwaukee. It was 4 years, $52 million. I know he's a little older, like that was kind of the tail end of his prime. And honestly, he has kind of infuriated me watching the Bucks the past couple of years. But just like when you list off some of like Steven Adams, and he just got extended for another $25+ million. And then Brook Lopez is making 13. It's pretty good value for them. But I agree with you. I think the baseline we should be thinking about for Ayton is probably 25. Like, even if he played a little bit better than he has so far this season, but didn't, you know, improve by leaps and bounds, like he could probably walk into a negotiation with the Suns this summer and start talking about that type of contract and not be like, you know, lit up. Like, it would be pretty reasonable to do that, I think. So that is what we're kind of talking about here. So when you think about that, the contracts that each of these guys is headed for, the fact that Mikhail has outperformed DeAndre so far and is probably, like we said, that Jaylen Brown contract was probably the tops for him. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the baseline we're talking about here for Ayton. So when you think about that and sort of what they mean to the team and what they mean sort of in how they can affect games in the NBA in the modern era right now, who do you think has a higher trade value? Like, just right now, if teams are calling the Suns, which guy could command more, and how far apart are they for you?
So I would say that probably depends on the team too, because, you know, if a team's trying to take on like a high upside, like cornerstone type project, then I think DeAndre has more value. But if you're a team looking for complementary piece that just fits pretty much anywhere and will command less in free agency, then I think Mikal is definitely his, especially right now with, you know, this pause and just small sample size. It's definitely changed like the opinions of from just the start of the year. I think a lot of people would have said, you know, Ayton has a higher trade value, as much as like a lot of fans love Mikal. This leap just, I think, sets him apart. So it's tough. I think it just depends on the team that would be trading for him. And
in a vacuum, it's probably Ayton though, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So it just depends on what the trade looks like too. So in a vacuum, I'd give it to Ayton, but as far as like value and like a team trying to just, I don't think Mikal's going anywhere. So I don't think we have to worry about that.
Which one do you think the Suns value more highly than Mikal?
Ooh.
Or which one do you value more highly for the Suns? Like leaving their front office brains out of it, just us, me and you.
Me, I would say Mikal, just because I think he's like, if you could build a perfect player in a lab to put next to Devin Booker, it's Mikal Bridges. And I think he's going to be so important to their success. Like once they become hopefully a consistent playoff team, he's like the heart and soul of the team. He does the little things so well, and it's not like a knock on Ayton. It's just, I think I've been like, since his Villanova days, I had Mikal, you know, as like a top five prospect or like fifth, I think that year. So I've always really liked his game, and just seeing the off the dribble stuff coming to life, and you know, just a versatile two-way wing. Like that's just like the trend in the NBA right now. That's what everyone covets. So, you know, centers are always replaceable. You can find value in different spots, but you know, Mikal Bridges, like they players like that just don't grow on trees. So I would value Mikal over Ayton at this point.
I think I would too. And like the identity that this team wants to have, like to me, it's not necessarily what's going to determine their salary or whether they're traded or what. But I do think like part of what you have to talk about when you talk about Mikal is like his makeup, the kind of player and guy he is. Like that's what this Suns team wants. And not to say Ayton isn't that, but I think you're already seeing like, I think Mikal holds a higher spot in this team's sort of leadership hierarchy than Ayton does. And he's becoming more outspoken. He's becoming more vocal with his teammates. Like we heard what Chris Paul said about him last week after his 34-point game, like all that stuff. It does matter. And it matters to how he's perceived by other teams. It matters to how he, you know, rubs off on his teammates and coaching staff and all that stuff. When you're talking about which player does a franchise value more, like, even if it's on the margins, that stuff does start to add up. So I agree with you. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I just want to clarify, I'm still very high on DeAndre. It's not even a knock on him. I really do.
Don't live in fear of the fans.
Oh, no, it's not even that. I know there are some pretty passionate Ayton fans out there, but I've been a longtime supporter and believer in Ayton, especially just with the strides he's made defensively.
There's a spot for both of them on the team, right? Like I said, we're not picking between the two of them.
Yep. And I think just in terms of like offensively, he's obviously better than this. He's always been better than this. It's just a mental thing he's working on right now. So I think there's always going to be like the overreactions, especially early in the year when you don't have a lot to go off of. So once he gets out of this little mental slump and just gets more acclimated, I think offensively he's going to start to pick back up to where we know he can be. So I think both these guys will like ultimately end up re-signing in Phoenix. But yeah, it's just a question of how much, because it's going to be really fascinating to watch over these next couple of years.
Yeah. And that Spencer Davies story you referenced, I think one of my favorite parts of reading that was the stats that Spencer got. And then the quote that Mikal gave about defending like with Ayton, and it just made me think again about this core does fit together well. You know, that's another reason, like you don't have to think about who's staying and who's going and what's the pecking order and like which guy's going to have to be cut loose, or like even the Sixers where it's like, okay, at some point, like we got to make sure these guys fit, or Indiana with the two bigs, like none of those decisions really face the Suns. So it's just about making the best of each guy. And, you know, eventually maybe there's some trade package and this becomes a discussion again or something like that. But for right now, like you said, it's watching them grow together. How much do they each command salary wise, and how do you keep building? But the Memphis game will be a good one, because if Valanciunas is out and the game does happen, like, that should be a nice opportunity for Ayton to get back on track, because they're not really going to have much size inside at all. So I'm looking forward to that, and looking forward to a week where we hopefully can talk about Suns games again and get back on track here with the show. Again, you guys, hit that follow or that subscribe button wherever you are listening. And hopefully, Suns games, Suns chatter, everything that you're used to every single morning in those feeds for you. Thanks for coming on, as always, Brandon.
Yep, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.